for our village board meeting, regularly scheduled one. It's 7:05.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
President Naduce.
Here. Okay, so if I can ask everyone to please stand.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have two citizen comments. I know you, do you want to wait until we talked about the contract, citizen, or do you want to talk now? Yeah, okay. Hopefully we'll get through some of this. And then we have Phyllis. Phyllis, welcome. Phyllis Rubin, there you go.
Hi there. I'm Phyllis Rubin. I live at 411 Ashland Avenue. Unit 6B, and I want to say, I just really got on today to look at the agenda and the packet, and I looked quickly through the Lakeshore Recycling thing, and it looks wonderful. I hope it turns out as wonderful as it looks. I didn't read everything, but I congratulate you for this, because there are a number of things I noticed. You're going to collect electronics, I think, twice a year. That's terrific. They said in the packet that there is a poster or a flyer that will say what kind of recycling is accepted, and it can be downloaded or printed. I couldn't do that. There's nothing on the website that lets you print any that flyer. So we need a printable, so I know you'll fix that. In terms of plastic, I was curious about this. You're not specifying the number in the chasing arrows. You're not specifying the number of plastic. You're going to accept any kind of plastic, even 6? I'm asking that question. We'll need to know, because, and it looks like you're not accepting tops or lids. So that's a question I have, because your flyer seems to say only jars and containers. And I see that you want it loose, which is terrific, because that's what I do already. and I have a question. Maybe this is for a little bit in the future. Can the group I'm in, Go Plastic Free, follow one of your trucks one day and learn what really happens to the plastic you collect? We are very interested in that. So anyway, thank you very much. It looks very promising.
Great, well, thank you. Oh, okay.
And one more thing, I'll just make a mention of Lake and Lathrop. I know it's not on the agenda. I don't see anything happening. There's a piece of equipment on the land, but I know they're supposed to be doing things underground, so maybe I won't see it, but there's nothing visible happening except for the piece of equipment. And that's all I have to say.
All right, thank you, Phyllis. Let's address your plastic question. Maybe Katie, do you want to answer Phyllis?
The village does not accept number 6. It's 1 through 5 and 7. And Jeff, is that accurate?
He's trying to get it. Why don't you just come up here?
George and Katie are on the Zoom this evening.
Yeah.
So when we get to that item, I'm more than happy to kind of throw it over to them, and they can walk us through theirs, George, what is and isn't recyclable, as well as when we're going to be rolling out those informational efforts for the residents and that too. So I'm more than happy to dive into that when we get to that item.
Okay.
If that's okay.
So stay tuned on that, Phil, because
okay, they're going to update the flyer then, I think, that's on the website. Okay, fine. Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
And then let me just address the Lake Lathrop. We are going to have a groundbreaking ceremony event this Thursday. It's going to be on our website. Please join us April 14th at 11 o'clock. So it's going to be, coffee and cake and, a groundbreaking ceremony. So this is, you know, Cedric has invited certain guests to be part of the presentation. I'll say a few words, and then hopefully this sets our tone for more to come. But you want to say something?
No, I think you covered it very well. Yes.
Okie dokie. So, so please come and bring your building with you. We'd love to see you. Okay, so with that, I will go ahead and we'll ask the elected officials to make their comments and announcements. So maybe Erica, we'll start on your end. Do you mind?
Thank you. So before we begin, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. We are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I don't have too many comments tonight. I do just want to acknowledge what's happening nationally and celebrate that we now have a new, our first Black woman Supreme Court Justice, Justice Brown Jackson. So very excited about that. What a pivotal moment for our nation. And then also just talk a little bit about, I know that I'm sure Kathy and others who were there will talk about it, but on March 24th, I joined a couple other members from the Village Board to talk to state representatives and senators around the, I'm going to forget it because it's a long, on our Saints Night, the local government distributive fund, among other items as well, the viaduct for Lake and Lathrop, and we got some really good and new ideas around how we can maybe go about that and connecting more federal representatives to help us in that effort. I also was able to attend a Unity Day for the Latino Policy Forum, who once a year gathers those who are organizers on the ground in relation to Latino issues. And it was a wonderful event, very widely attended from across Chicago and the state. And the part that I was able to go to was around how to make voting more accessible and how to get more Latinos and Latinx people across the state into voting. Very, very good event.
Yeah, thank you.
First, I guess, happy Easter, happy Passover, and for those that celebrate Ramadan, have a generous Ramadan. On the 9th of April, I attended the River Forest Bike Exchange, so they already have their staff out. They made over $1,100 for the District 90 Green for Good. 45 bikes were registered.
Yay.
Yeah. Officer Ben, as he's called by the kids. 150 bikes and ride-ons, like scooters and stuff, were donated. 100 bikes and ride-ons were taken home. And 50 bikes were donated to Working Bikes. So we thank everybody who participated across the village. Part of village administration, thank you for donating water. It was a little cold, so we probably didn't need as much water as other years, but that was great. Secondly, I did have a meeting with a village resident about trees. And this person is very passionate about trees with regard to, quite frankly, the need for a very strong tree canopy, and that there are those in the village who might be cutting down trees without really understanding the implications of their actions, and or cutting them or trimming them at the wrong time of year, potentially introducing illness, which will take up more trees. So this is something that the Sustainability Commission will be talking about tomorrow to see if we can actually have this recent retiree join with her passion and her time and talent to make a difference.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
On March the 31st, I attended a meeting at the MMC relating to our age-friendly collaborative. I attended on behalf of Kathy Ducey. And the point of the purpose of the meeting was to actually discuss maximizing our the resources at the AARP. But also, in addition to that, we talked about whether we should or shouldn't pursue the regional AARP group approach, and we decided we would. And for those of you who are not familiar with AARP, if you're a member, you have access to a number of resources, and there were some municipalities that are part or of our AF age-friendly collaborative who are not necessarily members and don't have access to those resources. And so what we're talking about is having our age-friendly collaborative become a regional member, so everyone in the MMCAF collaborative can have access to those resources. And then we discussed how detailed should we prepare a proposal to submit to the AARP. And we decided that our action plan would be probably more effective, like a one-pager with target points of what we would be focusing on and where we would go with that. So, so that's where we're at currently. And then on April the 8th, I attended as part of the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. There's a DEI working group that I'm sort of indirectly familiar with because of the age-friendly collaborative. The topic was regarding on hiring and recruitment. We talked about different types of strategies to recruit more diverse pools of candidates. We also talked about the challenges that that it comes in internal capacities inside the municipalities in terms of their hiring processes, as well as possible adjustments in our hiring process to make it more equitable and accessible. So, of course, looking at any organizational policies that would either encourage or discourage diversity. Next topic will be on May the 13th regarding data analytics and the last but not least, kudos that the red light camera permits were issued. Thank you, thank you, thank you. On behalf of the village staff, I want to thank Jeff, Chief O'Shea, and anybody, oh, Brian, I think you were yep. somewhat involved. Yeah, somewhat involved. And then for at least on the board, Kathy and of course, Erica, who attended Lobby Day. And so we were able to focus on making that request. Also, thank you to, although Walsh is not here, he did accommodate us with a couple of meetings to try to move the Department of Transportation. Who said they were going to issue that permit within a day or two, and a day or two took a lot longer, more like a month or two. But yeah, so, but we're happy we got them, and so we can move forward. So thank you for everybody who participated.
Nothing new to add. Thanks.
So I have a few things. First, we had our TRHT, Truth, Racial Healing, Transformation meeting hosted by Dominican University. And I continue to pass the community events along to staff to put on our online calendar. And I want to thank staff for continuing to cooperate and coordinate on that. One of the things that we're talking about is our event for Juneteenth this year. And my leadership lab cohort and other stakeholders are working on some Juneteenth events in the greater West Villages area, including a Juneteenth parade that River Forest is going to be participating and cooperating with, and a flag raising this year as well. So I wanted to thank village staff, Elijah, Brian, Chief O'Shea, and Officer Ransom were on the last, or have been on some of the parade calls, and I know that Brian, you and Elijah are planning on getting together to talk about the flag raising. So those are some exciting things that we're working on with details to follow.
Mm-hmm. I'll give a shout out to Chief Gartner as well. He's helped.
Thank you. Yes.
That guy.
Then my next item is more of a question, and that is that on the village website, on the online calendar, it shows that we have a committee of the whole meeting scheduled for next Monday. Is that happening?
No, we have to, I have to get the calendar up.
I would ask that because, as I mentioned to you, Brian, I actually took a red eye back a few Sundays ago, thinking that we had a meeting the Monday after, and I certainly wouldn't have done that if I would have known. So I would ask that we get those schedules accurate.
Yeah, I'd agree. We should have those, and we should also look at the boards and commissions. The names are need to be updated too. There's a lot of maybe. In addition to the dates, we got to look at names on the website.
When it, if and when they change, if staff could somehow push that information out to us rather than relying on us checking the calendar to know that there's a change, because I did not know that there was a change. My last item is just to recognize a local resident, Laura Maycruck. Who's a local realtor, was identified as one of the 2022 notable residential real estate brokers in the whole Chicago area. She's one of 45, and she's a resident and a, you know, also a business owner in the area. So shout out to Laura Maycruck for her honor.
Okay, I don't have much to say. Just definitely want to wish everyone a happy holidays as they approach. Just a quick DEI status. We did meet April 4th. As you may recall, we have broken our group down in subgroups so that we could get more work accomplished. And they're divided into 7 subgroups, and I'll just list them. RFP consultant group, employment HR group, purchasing and supplies, housing is a group, community outreach is a group, intergovernmental relationships is a group, and then governance DEI review framework is a group. So we've noticed, Eric and I, and as well as Brian have noticed, that you know, there's a certain excitement now that they're all working together and working on their specific issues. So we had a status review of everyone's subgroup, and as well as an educational training about working together and trying to continue to work together, and we're going to continue to work on working together so that you know, we can accomplish some of the goals that lay before us.
Yeah.
There are some really great ideas that are coming out of our groups already, and they're really, they've are just going through all of it. So we have told them in no uncertain terms that, like, everybody can't rush to village staff for information all at once, that does need to be prioritized in some level. So I guess I would say to village staff and to Brian, if you at some point feel like it's a lot of stuff coming from the DEI, that we can.
I just had a couple things. First of all, all trustees, happy holidays coming up this weekend, and hopefully at some point in time we will have spring. I'm not ready to predict that yet. A couple things. I also attended the bike exchange. I mean, there's a lot of hearty souls out there on a cool Saturday morning, and you know, the amount of time spent looking at bikes, I think, was greatly reduced by the lower temperature. But congratulations to the group on that. Next, as I was driving over here this evening, I noticed that Keystone Park was filled with young people getting ready to play baseball, and I would ask all of our residents to be cognizant of that as they're driving up and down the streets as the baseball season is upon us, and kids are running out grabbing balls and things, so just be extra careful when you see activity in the parks. And then last, one day, a couple of weeks ago, right after a little bit of snow had melted off the street, I noticed that our street sweepers were out already. So I want to reach out to the Public Works Department and say thanks for starting to get some of that winter crap off the streets. And it's starting to look good out there. So again, if we get some spring and some flowers planted, I think we'll all be a little bit happier. So thanks again.
Happy holidays, everyone. I'm going to just, there's no particular order. I'm just going to kind of tell you what I did this last 2 weeks, which was pretty busy. I attended and spoke at the Dominican inauguration of Glenna Temple this past week, the 11th president of Dominican. Really excited because it is they're over 100 years old, you know, university, Rosary College, and now university. And so to only have 11 presidents, it's pretty exciting. And Glenn is going to be, I think, just fantastic for that organization. I attended a D90 third grade class, and I did a presentation on local government, so they all saw your face. And so they know all about you and what we do here in River Forest. I also attended a senior class at Mother McCauley, again, to talk about local government. So I did my official duty for teaching local government. As Erica said, and Rez, we went to the IML lobby event. It was really productive. And we did get a lot of great ideas, especially from IDOT. Erica, you were mentioning that. I think the one that really we came away with is trying to look for grants that address environmental equity and justice. So I think that's a really a hot one that we can probably hop on. So, and it was just, I think, a really good opportunity for us because we saw a lot of our state representatives. All of them are leaders in their specific organization. Senator Harmon, of course, is the president of the Senate, and Representative Welch is, of course, the Speaker of the House. Who both represent River Forest. So it was kind of good to be able to meet with them or at least, you know, acknowledge that we exist. So it's great. Again, reminder, Lake and Lathrop groundbreaking this Thursday, April 14th at 11 o'clock. I hope everyone can make it. Everyone is invited. So please join us. This will hopefully be the start of a good thing at that corner of Lake and Lathrop. And hopefully we can get beyond Lake and Lathrop. I hope we can see else soon. And then last, I did listen into the DEI meeting. I agree with you. There's a lot of excitement going on in terms of what the subcommittees are doing. A couple of observations, and the only one that I would just say tonight is I think it was real hard to hear.
Right.
And really? If, I don't know if there's a way we can get a better audio, but yeah, I don't mean it. I just think it's a constructive comment, but it was hard.
We agree. Okay. Typically, we have microphones in the room that are set up, and our tech that was helping us wasn't there
to do it.
But it is something that we have heard in the past, so it's not.
I just want to make sure that, because there's so much good work, I just want to make sure that they can hear people. Couple of observations, but that was the big one for me. And that's it. So move on to our public hearing for our village operating budget. We have to do this by law. Mm-hmm. So I will open up the public hearing meeting. So I address this to you.
Yeah, you just,
Brian?
Yes, thank you very much.
I'll read my notes. I just want to make sure this is not a side note. Okay, Brian.
Yep.
The fiscal
I read that.
Oh, you read it.
Yes.
Okay.
The fiscal 2023 budget was presented at the Committee of the Whole meeting earlier this evening. Pursuant to state law, the village is required to hold a public hearing on its annual budget prior to its adoption. Notice of public hearing was published on March 30th, 2022. Notice must be published at least 1 week prior to the hearing. Budget has been available to the public for inspection at Village Hall and on the Village website. And at this time, I invite the public to make any comments regarding the budget. The board will consider final approval of the budget at its April 25th meeting starting at 7 p.m.
Comments for the public hearing?
There is nobody registered.
Unless there's anybody that is speak, this is the time. Seeing none or hearing none, I will go ahead then and close the public hearing of our fiscal year 2023 village operating budget.
We need a motion.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay. Need a.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
All right, so we'll move on to our consent agenda. Someone to move the consent agenda A through M.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through M.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions regarding any of these items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please read the item and then take the vote.
Consent Agenda A, Village Board of Trustee Meeting Minutes, March 14th, 2022. B, Support of the Local Government Distributive Fund Resolution. C, Tax Increment Financing Resolution. D, Approval of a Contract in the Amount of $580,331.10. Capital Cement Company, Inc., for Green Alley Improvement Project Phase 1. Authorize the village administrator to execute the contract agreement. E, approve an agreement with Thomas Engineering Group to perform construction engineering services for not to exceed cost of $55,991.52 and authorize the village administrator to execute the contract agreement. F, approval of a payment in the amount of $23,117.22 to Springbrook Holding Company, LLC, for annual maintenance for the period from May 1st, 2022 to April 30th, 2023. B, approval of the payment in the amount of $26,117.41 to Klein Thorpe and Jenkins Limited for legal services. H, authorize the village administrator to execute a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system in the public right-of-way with the property owners at 1138 Park Avenue. I, authorization of sale by internet auction of municipal property owned by the Village of River Forest Ordinance. J, monthly department reports, March 2022. A, financial report, March 2022. L, accounts payable, March 2022, $1,941,948.83. M, village administrator's report. O'Connell?
Yes.
Faulkner?
Yes.
Gillis?
Yes.
Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
All right. Great, so let's move on to the items for separate consideration, 7A, if I can get a trustee to move and second 7A.
Motion to approve payment from the general fund to McDonald's Carabides for $58.60.
Second.
I ask the clerk not call my name in this matter.
Trustee Brennan.
Might want to read it first.
Apologies.
No worries.
Sent agenda for separate consideration. A, accounts payable from general fund to McDonald's Carabides totaling $58.60.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Faulkner?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. So let's move on to 8A. There's no motion here, but more of a direction and consensus, so I'll ask Jeff to kind of talk to us about Allard's, I guess.
Sure. So Washington and Keystone, the a resident came in with a request to actually put curb bump outs as we have along Chicago Avenue. The request was for those same bump outs to be placed on Washington at Keystone. Because of the substantial cost implication of that, we said, well, let's start with something more incremental, see how that goes, and then we can look at some, you know, other more permanent options further on down the road. So what we had discussed at Traffic and Safety was the idea, we recently approved this at William in Chicago as well, two bollards at the end of each parking lane so that drivers are physically unable to drive through the parking lane and enter the intersection. So the idea here is just, again, to add some bollards so that there is a physical obstruction to prevent drivers from driving through the parking lane at the intersection. Again, no motion is required. I just wanted to make sure we had consensus before we started putting bollards up all over town.
Any
opposition?
I don't have opposition, but I just have a question. I mean, they're not the most attractive, so I know that we're doing this on a temporary measure, but what is the long-term plan?
It depends how effective the bollards are. If we want to make a permanent obstruction there and we want to explore curb bump outs like we have along Chicago Avenue, that's fine, but we just explore that from a cost perspective, and then again, as we spoke earlier this evening, if traffic and safety, that would ultimately have to come back to the board. But I would imagine at least a year, because we're going to be taking these down in winter as well, so as not to obstruct plowing operations. So that's, again, something else that would have to be considered if we did move to something more permanent. But I would imagine at least a year, a full kind of walkthrough of this seasonal, that we can get a gauge as to how effective they are, how much the residents in that area want or don't want them.
It does sound like from the report, these bollards instead of bump outs. And if I remember correctly, on Chicago Avenue, we have bump outs there, and I feel like there are residents who don't like those because it inhibits biking. So reading the report, I thought it's a great idea to do it.
I have one question. I agree with the bollards. The packet said something about a high visibility crosswalk that used to be at that intersection that maybe have been paved over when we redid the roads. Are we planning on putting that high vis crosswalk back in?
Yeah, so all the crosswalk striping will be replaced. Then that's just going to be something that's done as part of our annual thermoplastic striping project.
Thanks.
Have your consensus?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Don't go too far.
Yeah. Jeff, we're going to do the. Oh, yeah, we do. We have Susan. I don't know if Beth wants to speak. Okay. So let's go to 9A. Let's get a motion second, and then we'll have Susan talk on this topic, and then we'll.
Motion to waive bids and approve a contract with Lakeshore Recycling Systems, LLC, to perform solid waste collection disposal services for the Village of River Forest, as proposed.
Second.
Okay, very good. Susan, you want to?
Hello, my name is Susan Schrett. I'm a resident of Keystone Avenue, first block of Keystone Avenue. And I'm talking about the waste that's just coming up next. And I just first like to acknowledge how hard the Department of Public Works has worked on this negotiation. This is unlike other ones because it was an acquisition of Trump. And, it's definitely reflected reading through all the paperwork. They worked really, the village attorney as well, worked really, really hard on this. And I don't want any of my comments to be interpreted as diminishing in any way these efforts that they've made. As a River Forest Sustainability Commissioner, I've had a front row seat to the negotiations going back to the survey that was sent out last fall. And I just have to share that I've been mystified throughout this whole process. As a professional economist, I was trained to look at different choices as a trade-off. And so early on, I started asking what certain things cost, because we can't have everything. If we have one thing, we can't get another. And I had a hard time getting answers to those questions. And when we were asked to put our input into the survey, I tried to incorporate there to say, of course people want everything, but it's not going to be free. So given that there are trade-offs, what do you value most? Okay. And so this is the perspective that I'm looking at all of this from. When I look at this contract, what it says to me, what do we as a village value? We value this custom white glove walk-up service, and we are giving up other things, other opportunities in our pursuit of this. So specifically, when I asked, I know that George Strom, I saw that he was on the call, when I asked, what does this cost us compared, because as he's pointed out, as that's in the materials for anybody that read through carefully, we are the only village in this area that requests a service. And, I wouldn't want villagers to think that this comes free. And so I never got an answer to that. So I couldn't make estimates on this based on that, because I never received an answer. And perhaps as the Board of Trustees, that's something that you might want to know. Let's see. Here, I can't read my own notes. Oh, I did want to comment that a former head of the Sustainability Commission, who has moved out of the village upon hearing of this, was so moved that she took a Sunday afternoon to reach out to the village board to express her dismay in the lost opportunities in this contract. And so I am with her on that. But at this point in the process, since I have tried at every juncture to address this and smiled or told her I was listened to, and I didn't see any changes other than I did notice that in Lakeshore's proposal, there were many more references to how sustainable this was. I didn't see any increase, but there were many more references to how sustainable this was. So I did submit a written comment because I did take a shot at doing my own calculations. Trustee O'Connell, yours was bounced back to me. Does that mean you did not receive it? And so I'm not going to go over this. And the reason I took the time to do this was I just wanted you to know that these were not off-the-cuff comments.
When did you send that to them?
Nobody got that? I don't think so. Really?
When did you send it?
I sent it at 4. The only thing that I sent it to, it, on the instructions it said to send it to VBOT.
Yeah.
No? And I reached out to Elijah to see if you had gotten it. And was it forwarded to the trustees? But everybody's saying they didn't get it. Oh, you did get it? Okay.
Like it
okay. As I said, the only one that was bounced back was Trustee O'Connell, and that's why I brought a copy for him to look at. Katie, did you get it?
I'm looking. I don't see
it. It shows 3:53 p.m., if that helps.
It wasn't.
So I apologize. I apologize that you haven't had time. So I wasn't going to waste your time, but since you're not looking at this, I will. I'll read through it. My name is Susan. My name is Susan Charette, and I've been a resident of River Forest for the past 23 years. There are several elements of the waste haul contract under consideration that concern me, but I'd like to focus tonight on the cost. When I moved to River Forest, and until 2007, the refuse collection fee was $135.50 per year. Since 2007, the fee has increased to $363.50, or 2.7 times that amount for people that like percentages, that's 268% increase, compared to core inflation over this same period of time of 36%. So our refuse collection is approaching, I said 10 times here, approaching 10 times that of regular inflation. The proposed contract incorporates an even higher rate of yearly fee increases in the past 5 years, 3% beginning next year. And I also noticed, reading through carefully, that there's an option to extend for another 5 years. I imagine the 3% would be applied. So that would be a 3% locked in, which represents a pretty significant rise. One of the main reasons River Forest Refuse Collection is so expensive is because of the special white glove walk-up collection service not commonly offered in the industry today. I'm not going to read through, but I pulled out the excerpt from the, and I'm happy to pass this on. River Forest residents pay this higher rate whether or not they benefit from it. The agenda packet states that there are 434 residences, that's a little over 10% of the village, who are on alleys where a much less labor-intensive collection service is employed, and yet they are charged the same rate as their non-alley neighbors. When I asked village staff why our rate under negotiation is significantly higher than Oak Park's recently negotiated contract, also with Lakeshore Recycling, which just as a reference is $316.70, I was told it was due to the white glove service some residents receive. Using Oak Park's rate as a comparison, since I was never able to get the answer to that for River Forest, alley residents currently pay $46.80 more per year than Oak Park is, despite not benefiting from the service. Over the five-year period covered in the proposed contract that you are asked to approve tonight, this amounts to over 100,000 cross-subsidy from alley to residences to their non-alley neighbors, and I have the calculations there if you want to see how I figured that out. Further, some of the most affordable homes in the village are located on alleys, making this cross-subsidy a completely regressive policy. I don't know if everybody knows what regressive means, but it basically means that you ask the people who have the least to pay the most. The village offers different rates for basic and unlimited service, so there's absolutely no reason it could not offer a different rate for people living on alleys with a much less labor-intensive collection route. So my particular ask at this, you know, late junction, I know there won't be major changes made to this, but I propose the Village Board rejects this regressive $100,000 cross subsidy and charge Alley residences Oak Park's current fees, which would result in only a 50-cent increase per month for non-Alley residences who benefit from and rely on custom white glove walk-up service. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't even read the second page. So, all right. So I appreciate the comments. I asked Jeff and George.
So just to back up a bit, I'm sure everybody's thankfully aware at this point, the village's current contract is up at the end of April here. So we've explored and negotiated with LRS, who has acquired Strom, to enter contract. So that is what is for you for approval here this evening. You know, we discussed at the last meeting the major contract components that are different from our current contract. We've also worked with the village and attorney to kind of compile all of the previous documents with the new proposal and the current documents and create one contract. So we've maintained all of the existing contract language that we've, you know, been working off of for the last 7 years, with the addition of the new proposal elements that we've discussed a couple of times now here, or at least once going back to February. Again, the 3% rates are frozen in the first year of this contract, increasing at 3% thereafter. This is the same, though the rate varied on the previous contract, our current contract rather, they average out to 3%. So some were up around 4, some were down at 2.5, but over the life of that contract, it was 3. So the increases, other than this first year where they're frozen, the increases are still consistent with the overall existing contract. Talked about the three different composting options. That was in an effort to incentivize more participation in the composting program. Also talked about the two at-home collections for our household hazardous waste as well as e-waste. Those are not currently included in the contract, but those will be included at the base rate for everyone throughout the village. We've also worked in some village-owned facility e-waste pickup with LRS as well. Again, not something that's currently in the contract. A lot of education, resident education, informational brochures, mailers that are going to be going out. So again, trying to just provide more information. That was one of the major themes we saw in the sustainability survey feedback that we received, was just general information. So we're making a big push in there as well. And the customer service side of things, with as many touch points as we have throughout the village, there are missed pickups certainly. So one of the things we're going to be really focusing on throughout this next contract is figuring out what the problems are, instead of just, you know, missed pickup. Okay, let's go take care of that, but let's find the root of why the pickup was missed and how do we avoid that happening again. So the missed pickups are going to happen again with as many touch points as this contract has. We would just want to minimize those moving forward as much as we can. So that is the current contract, essentially, that's here before you this evening. I know there were some other questions about the opt-out compost. Thank you. So happy to answer that, whatever order you want me to take questions in. You start with that. So opt-out compost. This is something we, George and Katie from LRS, and we discussed. We mentioned it at the board level in the February meeting as well. Currently, composting is opt-in. Residents are not composting unless they so choose to, and now they have three options to do that. And working with the LRS team, we developed three options for composting. The idea is, obviously, we're trying to incentivize people to compost. Over time, we would assume that the rate of participants continues. At a certain point, we wanted to build in a trigger for at least a discussion with the LRS team to determine whether or not the village wants to do opt-out composting. That, like recycling now, everybody recycles. You don't want to, you just throw all of your recycling in the garbage. With opt-out composting, everybody would have to compost. In this case, instead of just not doing it, you would actually be able to opt out and save some money, but the default would be everybody's in the program. So that wouldn't kick in unless we were over 50%, participation and if we did it by year three. Not to say we couldn't do it after year three. I wasn't very clear with our emails going back and forth today. We could certainly do that after year three, but LRS would be looking for the village to make additional time commitments on the contract. So they don't want to jump into a brand new big program with 6 months left on the contract, and then we potentially go bid it out to somewhere else. There's a lot of upfront cost to LRS for this program. So if we were to, say, in year four, enter into, okay, we're getting close, we're at 51%, we'd like to, you know, look at opt-out compost, they would just ask us to make, you know, add an additional year to the contract or something along those lines. So they've indicated at every step of the way that they're willing to work with us. They've been great partners in this negotiation to this point. They just have to recoup their costs over a certain amount of time, and they don't want to enter into that program at the very tail end of the contract is what that boils down.
I just make a comment, I guess. I wasn't privy to the emails that you referred to earlier today, but I did receive the email from Julie Moeller. I think most everyone around the board table received that email, who was one of our past Sustainability Commission chairs. And she's in some ways largely responsible for the fact that we even have a curb in the village of River Forest. And one of the things she said about the provision that you're talking about in her email was that if increasing the composting is a priority, why would there be a restriction on the future opt-out? There should never be a number attached to any decisions that would be better for the environment. The village should be able to move on a decision at any time that benefits the earth. Who came up with this number, the 51%? Are you going to include the countless residents who use the yard waste bags with sticker in their number? If you do, I bet you are at 51% already. So that's a good point. How are you calculating 51%? And can we just get rid of the 51% and instead in this agreement say, if the village wants to discuss opt-out or offer opt-out composting, then we can discuss it with our provider?
Certainly that's something we can discuss with the LRS team. I don't know. That's kind of their metrics that they need to hit to make the program profitable for them as our vendor. But we can certainly go back to them and see if we could just remove the number altogether and kind of focus more on the time element of it, the year three or, you know, additional commitments thereafter.
I don't want to jump in if I don't need to, but if that's an issue, you know, we can strike it if needed and just work that out. It's not a big deal.
Okay, but George, I want to make sure we're clear because it is confusing. I mean, the 51 we thought was based on the fact that gives you enough whatever
correct
revenue that it kind of helps, you know, helps your cause and helps our cause with the residents. So
yeah.
Now I'm confused. It's like we're going to strike it.
We're
going to get to that point anyway.
Yeah, I think we will get to that point. I just don't want this agreement to come off as like we're an impediment to progress on the sustainability side. I think that we will get there eventually. The reason for 51% was we were thinking, you know, we're at almost 500 now. We'll get halfway there rather quickly with the reduced rates. But if that's something that's so painful for everybody to look at, obviously I don't want to be looked as someone that's kind of holding up progress for the village.
I don't know if that solves our question. You know, the question becomes, and Julie brought it up, is that with the current amount of residents that have composting plus the leaf or the sticker program, which gets us to a bigger, larger percentage, is that enough, you know, to, I assume, reduce the monthly fee or bi-monthly, whatever fee it is, to make it worth an opt-out program?
I
think that's really the point.
We'd have to really look at that, I think, some more to try to say.
I think Julie's point is remove the 51%. There shouldn't be a threshold that you have to meet in order to have the discussion, is how I read that.
I read it completely different. I read it as saying, we're going to have the discussion, no worries. But they're not going to move unless it's 51%.
No, actually, I read it this way, and I think we talked about it this afternoon, is that, look, in year three, at the end of their contract, they're going to require 51% or more because it needs to be worth their while. And George, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but my understanding is there's a clause in the contract that basically says that the Sustainability Commission will work with Lakeshore mm-hmm. throughout. And if we choose to want to move there ahead of time,
you like, can.
Prior to the 3 years, that's perfectly legitimate. It's just that at the 3-year mark, they have to have a certain level of participation because they have to build, they have to buy all the stuff to give to the people to participate in the program.
Correct. Yeah, if you look at normally the reasoning behind the carts part, the carts we normally pay off over 10 years. So the reason we kind of said, you know, after 3 years, we would want to either A, maybe we would have to figure out the cart purchase, maybe the village purchases the carts and then, you know, we don't worry about it. But normally on the collector side, we take those carts and say, okay, we're at 51%. We still have, you know, I don't know, 1300 or 1400 that we'd have to purchase. And then they'd only be, you know, if it didn't last the partnership or something, you know, they maybe only be out for 1 year. And then a lot of people don't like to get used carts as their new provider or something when we go hand them out to the next community or something. So that was the main reason. Once it hits 3 years from a cost perspective, it's really just the cart, the actual expense of purchasing the cart, not the collection part at that point.
Or we want an opt out. They would give us an opt out. It doesn't matter whether it's 3 years, 51, or you can take all of that out, Katie. The bottom line is that it's never going to get to a point where you're making that decision.
Correct.
Well, what I can say is that we've had curbside composting for a number of years. I don't know, 6 or 7 years now.
Yep.
We are at 400 something residents, which is about 10%. And we've worked dang hard to get that.
Yep.
There is no way that we're going to quintuple that in 2 years, even with this quote incentive of paying less than we already were paying for getting the compost service. So I can vote for this contract if a couple things are changed, and one of them would be if we remove the 50%, 51% provision. And I would also suggest, you know, if you're talking about it's a matter of money, why aren't we putting the $62,000 that we have in our coffers right now from the energy aggregation that was supposed to be earmarked toward environmental, you know, project? Why aren't we putting that towards paying for these carts?
And unfortunately, the $18,000 and the $36,000 are on the past budget years. But I mean, would that make a difference? Would that make a difference for the community to accept opt out?
I go back to it's a behavioral issue. I know people that would never compost because they're not going to do it.
Okay,
that's just not part of their behavior. Until we change the behavior to distribute all these carts, and I'm a composter, so I get it, but I don't think that we need to get people to compost first and then ask for it.
We know it's a financial issue. I don't disagree with you, Lisa, that some people just don't want to deal with their coffee grounds and eggshells, but for many people, and myself included, I am sacrificing to pay extra to have that bin. And I'm also doing the legwork, which I don't mind, to wheel it back and forth, which I did, you know, tonight because they're picking it up tomorrow. You know, it makes me feel good. I feel like I'm doing my part in some little way. So, but there are a lot of people who, you know, will not choose to spend that extra money for that because of, you know, the priorities. If they were given the carts, the caddy and the cart, they would use it.
I think there are just some people that it's enough for them to take their garbage out.
So one thing that we've seen is that people's behavior changes a lot because of their kids. And at our schools, they started recycling at the schools. The kids came home. They taught their parents how to recycle. Why aren't we recycling that? Why are you putting that in the landfill, trash mom? And it's the same thing with compost. These kids compost at school. They know how to do it. They will teach their parents. They will teach you.
There's some historical knowledge. As you were talking, I was kind of thinking about that with the recycling program. Kathy, you might be the best person to ask, like, but what did the rollout of recycling look like at River Forest? And
I'm sorry, I was just commenting.
No, it was about recycling. How did the residents take to recycle?
What did that look like? Was it in or was it opt out? Like
in general, when the village was when that program started, I have no idea. I'm sorry, I can't.
No, I know you can't. But I mean, I don't know who did. I don't know.
I think it's always been opt in.
It was always opt in that I remember. Then we just
I think what we're talking our recycling service is opt out. We pay for landfill and recycling. If you choose not to do it, so be it. But it's part of your bill.
But
and that's called opt out.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think initially it was that.
I'm sorry. I thought you said composting. I thought you said composting.
So I thought
so
initially
I can't correct
that's
it.
What
I
it was. And then we
that.
Said, oh, we got to a point like we are in this discussion.
Recycling is a good point.
Example.
It's a good example, right? So how did it work?
And I'm saying, is I can remember. I'm only here 21 years. But is that I don't remember at all that I just got a bin over time that happened. But I think I had requested. I don't know. I mean, and I think this is where we're at with composting. It's like, you know.
I think one of the questions that you asked, George, I'd love to hear the answer, is would that make a difference to you? Would that help move the needle if we were able to spend some of that, those sustainability dollars that we have, that we brought in from the energy aggregation to help defray the cost of the cart?
And that's for me? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, George.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, I mean, 63,000, it would depend on how we rolled that out. If it was based on the size that people chose, and obviously we could give a breakdown to the village after the call to say, you know, if that whole fund amount were to go towards that, here's pretty much what it would buy based off of size. Or if you said everyone get a 35 gallon cart, we could kind of give you some ideas how much that would purchase or subsidize.
But if we don't hit these numbers, then what happens at the end of the day is our vendor has to do something else with the cost. So the costs then go to adding on to regular trash and recyclables. That's the other part of the equation. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing to let the vendor come back and say, we haven't hit the 51%, so therefore we need a dollar increase a month or whatever it is. I mean, at the end of the day, the vendor has to make money. I mean, I was looking at Susan's thing here, which is interesting, but, you know, in her first statement, it's, you know, it was $135.50. Since she moved it, it's increased to $363. That's great information, but what is that relative to the industry? Because they've got to find places to put this stuff too. So I mean, it's just, it's not, you know, at the end of the day, we don't want to have a vendor who's not making money, is not servicing our community. So what are we willing to do? So if we're willing to give that up, are you willing to go ahead and say, that's fine, if you don't hit your number and you have to make up those revenues, they go back to everybody else?
Right? I acknowledge that we're probably not going to change this contract tonight to opt out compost. But I do think what we need to do is remove that 51% number so that we can have the discussion in a reasonable time frame, looking at all of the resources that we have, including this 62,000. I know you're shaking your head, Kathy. Oh, it's only 18 now or whatever.
I don't know.
But we get it incrementally. Right. Why aren't we putting that money towards this if this is our goal? We sign, you know, Planet Green agreements. We sign Greenest Region Compact agreements. We sign the Chicago Climate Accord. We do all of these things. We make all these promises. We're trying to hit all these numbers. This was low-hanging fruit for us to do. And, you know, we missed an opportunity here by not doing it. But I don't want to preclude us from being able to have the discussion by requiring that we hit a 51% number, which requires us to quintuple the composting that we have in a couple years.
Again, I go back to, I don't think that's what the contract says.
George,
I think that has to correct me if I'm wrong.
George, can you just clarify? I mean,
sure.
If we're at, you know, a year and a half into the contract,
if you called me tomorrow and said, let's
discussing it, right?
If the village called tomorrow and said, we really want to go ahead with composting, we would obviously do it. There's no, I don't think there's anybody, you know, that would not be blocking that. Really, I think the conversation where we came with the 51% number was realistically, you know, in this juncture, at this moment in time, it seemed as if it may not be the appropriate time to kind of have everybody move to this type of collection. But what would be the number that would kind of say we've gotten enough participation that the remainder of the people who maybe choose currently not to participate kind of say, well, everybody else is basically doing it. So now that makes everyone else going to kind of come aboard. So that was where the 51% number came from. Half the community's chosen on their own to pay extra to get this. Now let's sit down and kind of say, now we can really get a better rate for everybody else, kind of make sure everyone can participate. But obviously, if the village wanted tomorrow to sit down and say, let's go ahead and get this going, we would absolutely be at the table sitting there making it happen. There's no one, I would be the first one at the table, and Katie the same, and everybody at LRS would love to do it. So the 51% was realistically just a number to say almost the opposite. The people that have never been kind of contributing to wanting to do this would now kind of have the reason to be like, listen, everybody else is doing it. It's over the 50 percentile. Now we got to do it, you know, type of thing. So it was really just.
Or is your cost better? Or can you offer a better cost to the residents? And I think that
if at that point, yeah.
Contracts opt out, huh?
At that point, if the reason too was if we had primarily the majority of people doing this practice, you could give a better, more attractive proposal to collect it from everybody. So right now we're counting on some revenue from those stickers still. We're also counting on revenue from the composting customers. So it's a tightrope we're walking. If more people switch to composting, less people purchase stickers. And we're trying to walk that line. You know, if we were to switch to 100% customers that are doing composting, it's a lot more labor actually for us because you're stopping at every single house every single week. And that's a challenge that we have in communities that have a higher level of participation in composting. So like I say, we're kind of learning it as we go, but we definitely want to make sure that it's an endeavor that's profitable for both us and the village. But we don't want to make it seem as if we're the ones kind of being the ones in the way of progress.
And if it's okay, I just want to add to that. So just a couple of things, and I really respect that, you know, this is such a passionate subject here because I'm very passionate about it myself. So it's we're headed that direction, and something that I've seen in where you do, you know, kind of do the opt out, depending on, you know, the economy right now isn't exactly suitable for that. So, but we totally have that door wide open, like George is saying. But I did notice something I want to just say the Oak Park contract is not the same as this contract. And there's a lot of differences. I just want to mention that, but it's not apples to apples. But as we're rolling out Oak Park right now, you know, we're sending out brochures just for the HHW or the hazardous waste and the electronic waste. And along with that, compost. So they were shocked to see how many people have now signed up for compost. And a lot of it is just like, oh yeah, I didn't even know, you know, that that was an option. So I do think, and we're doing a pretty significant education campaign. It will also have YouTube video. And I think, you know, a special brochure just for this, so we can really focus on that. And I think that'll just be a good stepping. Just want to encourage everybody that, you know, it's to the opt out. We are totally open to it. We want it. And just know that, you know, I mean, we do have to make sense of it with our own budgeting, you know. So hopefully, you know, we hit that halfway mark. Like George is saying, it's really just a marker to say, okay, because we take a lot of heat for decisions that, you know, village board and city council will make on behalf of the city. And they think, oh, it's the LRS program. It's your program. No, you know, well, we really are just going to support whatever it is that you want as a whole. And so from what we, you know, our interpretation is just that, you know, it is in the future. It's just not there yet. So just be encouraged and know, and you know, if it is striking that 51% or adding language to just say, you know, it's for this reason, but it can be, you know, negotiated or whatever. I mean, we're very open and flexible to that. So I just hope that brings a little bit of.
Yeah, I completely understand. I mean, I think if you wouldn't care if we said, let's do it,
You're totally on board.
What do you want to do, Village? Yeah. So I think we're making this bigger than what it is. I mean, it, striking the 51%, I don't think is an issue with anybody. I'm going to ask you to, I mean, I don't normally do this because our time to discuss, but go ahead.
But there's something that's overlooked here, and that's why I feel it's important. Okay, so another difference between River Forest and Oak Parks on the composting side is that there are many people in River Forest that share. And what that's doing is it's obscuring the number of people who compost. So when we sit here saying nobody composts, well, we don't know the number of people because they're private deals. What they do in Oak Park is you divide it. That's on your bill. So we're losing an opportunity to know who's composting by having these be private deals between people. So that's another thing that I would suggest, that we sort of make an official policy that you can share it, the cost is divided in two, and that reduces the cost of the bins. We don't have to think of this as the only way we can get complete village participation is that we have one for every single residence. If we had one for every two residents, we could probably easily accommodate it. So I would just, you know, ask us to broaden our thinking and, you know, returning to what Kathleen said, if, you know, just having this very strict, it has to be 51, everybody, we're losing opportunities. There's a lot of backyard composters, like Lisa Gillis and myself. We don't know about them, so we're saying they don't compost, but of course they compost. They just do it privately. So I think we need to do a better job of seeing who actually does that, and that might be another service.
And I'm not going to disagree with that. That's a good point. The problem is I don't know if it, at the end of the day, matters, because you're going to get to that, you know, because now you've got the dollars shared, and now you got to invoice the, like, I share, and I just pick up the cost, you know, I mean, because that's, so now we're going to say, okay, now we're going to invoice my two neighbors. I think it's just more work. That cost, it's more work, has to go somewhere during the invoice.
And we discussed sharing as well during the negotiation, and, you know, certainly would encourage people to share compost if that made sense for them from a volumetric standpoint. From an administrative side of things, I don't know that we need to enter the village into the equation in terms of splitting bills and then what happens if one person pays and the other person doesn't.
Yeah.
But certainly we would encourage people, if that's what gets them across that line, to start participating, to share. And even if everybody of that 10% shared and we were really at 20 or 25% with at-home composters, going to an opt-out program would still be taking the other 75% potentially and kind of making them compost. So if that's, again, based on what George and Katie are saying, if that's a discussion that this board wants to have now or at some point in the future, they seem and have always seemed, for the record, more than willing to have that discussion at any point along the way, again, as long as they have a certain amount of contract on the back end of that so that it makes sense for them financially.
And just
so it sounds like
If it's okay, I just wanted to comment one thing really quickly. I do want to just highlight how much we have worked on this program to really tailor this is the composting program, which you now have the three different sizes, and that 35 gallon cart coming in at $13 a month is lower than a price of a sticker for yard waste every week. So we really worked. I can't stress it enough how hard we worked on trying to find an opportunity for any resident that wants to participate in the composting program at a cost-effective measure. So I really want to commend the board and Jeff specifically for pushing for those different type sizes and different type rates, because that's something that you have that other communities don't. And we really just wanted to make sure that we were able to meet the needs of the village specific to you. And, you know, deliver this so that we can get to 50% or 30% or whatever the number becomes that pushes the issue to get it where everybody in the community does have access to it.
So I was just going to say, it sounds like we're, you know, George, your LRS is willing to just continue the discussion without putting a number to it. And as I've always said, I think that Strom has been an excellent partner with the village, and I have every reason to believe that Lakeshore will continue to be. If we can just take that 51% number out so that we can have a creative discussion, whether that means that the village throws some resources that we have behind furthering discussion and letting us get to that sweet spot sooner.
say for the record, I think it would be up to this board to determine whether or not you want to do opt-out composting, and then we would just enter into negotiation to figure out whether is needed.
I think what Katie's saying is we're going to do the opt-in, but it just take out what.
I mean, like it doesn't matter. The discussion. It's at not going to happen tonight. I get that. But let's take this number out. I can vote for that provision if we take that number out.
It sounds like
maybe reasonable minds interpreted that provision different ways.
Well, what can we ask Greg?
Yeah, so the language says, should the composting program reach 51% participation by year three of the contract, the village and contractor shall determine whether to implement an opt-out composting rating program.
We can just say something like the parties agree to discuss opt-out composting.
Right. An agreement to agree in the future is not an enforceable agreement. This is meant to be an administrative reminder that if we reach a benchmark, let's get serious about this concept.
About
so
right.
if you want to
take it out,
then it's always on the table because with all your contractors, you can always approach them with new ideas and try to get to yes.
That's how I
and
it.
Amend
it's
if
for
necessary.
Us. It's a good trigger for us. Take it out. You just...
It's a suggestion of a threshold that I think is inappropriate in this situation, so I would ask that we take it out.
And so if that's the will of the board, then Trustees Bochner and O'Connell moved and seconded the motion.
Is the board okay with that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to you. No. The question is to keep the 51%. Figure in or take it out.
And I would
vote on it today.
I think what the village attorney is suggesting is that we just verbally amend the motions, and we can still wrap this up.
I just
want
to make sure that we're all in agreement.
And I guess I'm asking.
Like we're going to be okay.
George, to Trustee Gillis's question, George, can you confirm that if we take this 51% threshold out, that you're still willing to negotiate opt-in composting at any point during the contract?
Yeah.
Just negotiate it.
Yeah. I mean, we could, I don't know if you could do a strike through or if you could just do an amendment that said, should the village or should the compost program like be willing to be implemented at any point, the village and the contractor can negotiate those terms. Or a strike through, either one. I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
Brian,
we have it captured, yes.
We're striking the
51% line.
No, I know, but we need language to make sure that we all agree to it.
Yeah, I can initial next to it. I think we did that in a past contract before, if we have a strike through.
I'm saying for tonight.
Right. So in Appendix F, Section C1, you delete everything before the first comma. So it reads, the village and contractor shall determine whether to implement an opt-in composting rating program. That's how Section C1 would read. Correct. The parties are always free to amend. And if an opt-in composting program were to come to fruition, there would be an amendment to this agreement put before the village.
And just for the record, it's opt-out, not opt-in.
I'm sorry, opt-in.
Okay.
I'm getting confused.
Okay. Everyone's okay with that. So we need an amendment.
One question can I ask? Jeff, the last time we talked, what I understood was since it's a multi-year contract, after 1 year, if satisfaction was not met, we were able to get out of this contract. Is that still the case?
Yes, that is something we worked into the contract. It was a 95% threshold. If we get below that, we have implemented that.
I did see that, but it also refers to developing a report using metrics mutually agreed upon. Have you guys come up with that metric?
Okay, 95% is the number that
only thing.
Yep.
There's nothing else in the contract.
Correct. It was a missed pickup. That was because we have to pick one metric to use. So it's missed pickups. And right now we hover around 98%.
Okay.
Because again, there are always something gets missed here or there, and we have to address that. But if we dip below 95 at any point, then we get to revisit that and can trigger a conversation. So yes, we absolutely work that in.
So how do I
amend? Just say yes to what that you agreed with
our village attorney.
Amend.
And then Trustee O'Connell, yes, concur. Okay.
Okay.
So the motion is to approve the agreement as amended.
But I have another question. Mm-hmm. And this was also raised in Julie's email that everyone received. And that was a new provision in the contract that I hadn't noticed before. And that was to have a day in the, to allow the opportunity to have a day in the village for sort of a free throw anything you want into the landfill day.
That was old contract language. So that was just carryover language. And again, if that's not something, that was all additional cost because they also provide rates in that old contract for that event, if you will. If the board elects not to ever initiate that, then we don't enter into that. That was just a carryover from the previous contract. That was not something new negotiated.
I would move that we strike that because I think that offering that is a disincentive to use everything that we've done in this agreement. It's a disincentive to composting. It's a disincentive to recycling and reusing and repairing.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Katie.
And I've lost my train of thought.
Disincentive to.
And I think what it's doing, it's actually asking every villager to pay for this, even if you spend the time to compost, if you spend the time to recycle, if you spend the time to find a place to pick up, you know, furniture that you don't need, and if you spend the time to use the e-waste service that we've negotiated. It just goes against everything that we've said about our goals in River Forest.
May I suggest that perhaps we amend it to speak to a recycling extravaganza or something to that effect, because I read it as something that those labor costs can be used for a variety of things, perhaps including pickup along the street or an event such as that.
I love the idea of a recycling extravaganza. I'm not quite sure how.
Because it's the cost to bring in a team to do that kind of work.
Oh, I see.
Those costs are all in addition. Those are extra costs.
And that is like so desired. I'm like, well, okay, it could be so desired for that or some other similar. It could be amended into any kind of
a flooding event or something like that, where exactly. People are bringing carpet rolls out of the basement. So that the village could have an event that we would then have to pay for LRS on top of the base contract.
Why wouldn't we just stick with what we have with people? But if you have an old couch and you want to get rid of it, if you're not going to donate it somewhere, then you need to buy the stickers to get rid of it. Am I not understanding it?
No, it's still part of it.
That's still part of it. No, what I'm saying is I took that as, and I agree that maybe we can update the language, but it speaks to the labor, the extra cost above the contract to put on and to pick up on a one-day-a-year basis.
I think we keep it.
One-day-a-year basis could be a recycling extravaganza type event where you're paying for the labor to be at the event to do that work.
It's not a mandatory program that we have to do this. This is a optional program that if we choose to have an event like this,
yeah.
So it just allows for that to take place. It doesn't mean that we're actually going to.
I understand that it doesn't require it, but the optics are that it's giving, that the village wants to have it throw everything you want in the landfill for free day.
Well, I don't know why it came into the contract a long time ago, but from my experience in other communities, this is typically in your contracts, and it has to do with things, as Jeff was getting at. You have an event where there's a flooding circumstance, and you need to find a way to help families out. That's one particular instance. The other thing that you'll find in some communities, and not in our community, but certainly this is why you'll find that language in other contracts, is because you have fly dumping that then takes place, where I can't get rid of that big old television that was down in my basement, so I'm just going to accidentally fall off the back of a pickup truck. Much bigger problem then. So that's largely why you have these kinds of things within contracts, mm-hmm. Just to allow.
Well, we already have the flooding in here. Yeah. That's language in here already. So this throw everything you want in the landfill for free day doesn't cover the instance of a flood. That's already in the contract.
I mean, I can just jump in to give some clarity on this whole subject. is it's interesting because every time that we've had discussions, it's almost like just something that we've never had. I think decades and decades ago, there was some sort of cleanup day that was given and done. And it's always something that's been in the agreement because it's just something that the in the past was something that it was, if the village elected to do it, they had the right to do it in the future. It's not something that it's ever brought up in conversations other than when the negotiations are happening. They say, basically, we'd like to leave this in here in case it ever came up in the future. So that's that paragraph.
I like Lisa's idea of maybe just switching the language around so it doesn't look like we're doing a big dump.
And Strom has always helped us so much with our recycling extravaganza when we had it. I mean, you've been amazing.
Yeah, and one nice thing really to highlight, not to talk positives about the contract because there are so many, but the one positive, when we looked at the recycling extravaganza years ago, biggest challenges that I believe that happened in those events was when we would get inundated with the electronic waste and also the HHW. And the great thing I think about this agreement is that we've gotten those two things kind of checked off the box, check those off the list, because now you'll be able to access fantastic HHW program where you don't even have to leave your house, same with the e-waste, and they won't come at any additional cost. So I just wanted to highlight some of the sustainable things that were added to this contract that weren't there prior. Really a legitimate e-waste program that doesn't cost the residents, you know, $20, $30 every time they call. And then also that HHW program that's normally a significant cost, but when kind of spread across the whole village with participation, it brings it down to an affordable level that really wasn't there before with the Strom agreement. So I think that this has been a fantastic opportunity for both of us to kind of share on. And you know, I don't think that anyone is looking to do a junk away day, but you do have the language in there really at your benefit in case something ever did come up where times change and you were looking to go along that path to do it.
That's kind of how I see it. I don't think this is something that, you know, all the residents are going to read this contract and say, oh, you know, we've got this available to us. I think it's just available to the village officials, and I think it's appropriate. I don't think it disincentivizes anybody to do anything because we're going to have brochures and everything out the door that's going to... I think this just allows the village officials to have flexibility, which... So
I'd prefer to see it switched to the recycling extravaganza language that Lisa.
We have that language?
I think you need to actually have both because you never say never. You don't want to be in a position. I mean, is there a way to maybe add at the, again, upon that can enact a program such as a recycling extravaganza with the costs in appendix, whatever the appendix is or the addendum.
So you want to add
or,
language?
Yeah, or in case of, like, or at the,
all right, let's get to that point. So what do you want to change?
Need it for something else. Section 12, unlimited household waste removal day.
And you want to move that. I want to put extravaganza language in there?
I would just say, like waste removal day. Similar to the previous.
Well, I'm hearing Katie saying she wants to strike it, period, because she thinks it's our community to do composting other things. You're saying we need to change it to make it more clear.
Well, I suggested added that language to make it more palatable to Katie, because I think that, again, I thought that was
the issue.
Kind of the intent, but making it more broad, because it is us if you so desire, so we can just ignore it completely. But to your point, like I would just say, like a program like the River Forest Recycling Extravaganza, or the equivalent.
Yeah, that would work for me.
If you tell me, I don't know. I mean, I don't have.
It sends a completely different message.
Does it?
Yes. One is leaving it open. To cooperate with our vendor on a recycling extravaganza. The other is leaving it open to let all of our residents dump whatever they want in the landfill for free one day a year. And I understand Brian's point that nothing in Section 12 is a requirement, but everything that we do is looked at. if we've discussed this language, and if we say, oh, we want to have this, you know, throw everything in the landfill for free day, that's not the message I can get behind. I can definitely get behind the recycling extravaganza.
Going to go out either way. It's either going to go out with $4 stickers on it, or it's going to go out in a community sponsored event that we can monitor. You know, we've accounted for the hazardous waste. We've accounted for the electronics. Everything else is going to go on the curb with stickers.
So, and you know, that's okay. I understand the realities of, you know, waste pickup, but there has to be a cost to it, and that's the structure that we've. Is negotiated with.
So for Section 12, would we call it unlimited household waste or recycling removal day? And then.
What do you guys want? I mean, I think it's similar, but okay. I mean, an unlimited household waste removal day.
Well, why don't we call it, you know, recycling extravaganza day instead of unlimited household waste removal day?
Well, unlimited, I would just say unlimited, but why don't we just call it unlimited recycle.
Now, waste is what? I mean, is it included?
Is it better to leave it generic and just refer to some sort of unlimited, removal event?
Yes, unlimited waste and recycling removal day, right?
Waste or recycle removal day.
I think it's just important that we just make sure we qualify that, you know, that does not include electronic waste or household hazardous waste materials.
Agreed.
Because those costs a lot different. Those costs different. The costs are different there. So I just want to make sure we consider that too. I mean,
the language does already state all items placed curbside for disposable must be accepted material for disposal and not banned by the Illinois EPA. So
okay, so you just want to add recycling?
I think it's replacing
to have unlimited household waste removal and recycling day.
That's what Katie just said. You cannot, Lisa. It's already covered under a separate part of the contract.
No, I think you'd have to actually, with the exception of household waste and electronic
on the fly.
Electronic
might
recycling.
Just have to redo it.
But we're negotiating amongst ourselves.
Yeah, we're. It would, yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, I know Julie Muller just sent this in today, but I mean, I don't think we can wait till next. It matters. That's what I'm saying. I don't think we should be doing this on the fly. So I think, what if we bring this back in 2 weeks? We have to.
Yeah.
You too late.
Okay. Oh, okay. Too late. Last chance we have.
Just let's do it and get it right.
Okay. Thanks for indulging me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just because we're. I don't want to. So we'll just. We do. We have to.
Trustees Bachner and O'Connell will withdraw their motion in a second.
All right.
I withdraw my motion.
Okay.
Withdraw my.
Okay. And let's try to just make sure we narrow it down to these two issues.
Yeah.
I mean, if we brought it up, then it's going to go beyond.
That's true.
April 28th.
Right? Is there a way to actually, like, formally limit it to these issues?
Can we?
Well,
do
no.
This?
I mean, you just let's work with on these two issues with Jeff, and then Jeff will.
I was going to make a suggestion that every trustee who has their proposal, can you submit it over to Jeff and then he can put it
these
together?
These are two. No.
No, there's two. Only that's two. The thing. Of the
so
two.
I think we've already discussed it. I think we know what the two
okay.
are. No?
No, I don't know. I'm
just
not
want to bring
sure
up
I heard a consensus here, but
that our contract.
I would love clarity on that last.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
We have it. We have two issues that are on the table.
No, we're not going to.
No, I agree with that.
The 51, which I think we have language for already,
yeah.
Which is fine. Anything. And then the second thing is this Section 12.
Right.
So,
and if any of you do have suggestions for this
section
12 revision, by all means, send it to me and we'll
right.
work something
so
out
appendix
to
F,
get on the same page.
Only two issues. This is going on the record. I realize that this is in the notes.
Okay.
Appendix F and Section 12.
Okay.
Okay. All right, very good. All right, so let's move on to the police training report that I asked Chief O'Shea to do briefly to us. I thought it was important because I know Trustee brought up some training that she was interested in. I thought, oh, that's a pretty good idea. We should probably know everything.
I took the hint brief. I believe you mentioned. Hopefully, I can get there. There is so much information. We could do this type of presentation in a 40-hour session. But thank you, Madam President and members of the Village Board. Tonight, we are here to provide, in this public forum, an update on the River Forest Police Department's training program. In order to promote and protect citizen health, safety, and welfare, it is necessary and in the public interest to provide for initial and ongoing training and education. We want to raise the skill and knowledge level of officers by upgrading and maintaining a high level of training, which assists in our mission to be guardians and public servants. While education and training have always served as critical foundational elements for law enforcement, they are even more relevant in today's society. Not only do we want to serve our customers better, we want to ensure the concepts brought forward in the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing and the Illinois Chiefs of Police Collaboration with the NAACP on Shared Principles Resolution continue to be the blueprint for open-minded changes in police policy and standards. In addition, various court cases have made it clear that police departments have a responsibility for properly training officers. Inadequate training isn't just inconvenient. It's an issue of liability. Crisis intervention, duty to intervene, de-escalation, understanding mental health concerns, and those on the autism and dementia spectrums, providing for immediate first aid, and improving cultural competence, as well as unbiased policing best practices are not just mandates, but expected by the public. As a police department, we appreciate the Village Board's ongoing support for the professional training funding needed to serve this great community. Tonight's presentation will be provided by the department's training program supervisor, Sergeant Michael Swierczynski, and crime prevention and community policing officer, Ben Ransom. I'm now gonna turn this over and we will be running a PowerPoint. Sergeant.
Good evening, my name is Mike Swierczynski. Shift supervisor and I supervise the training at the police department. And, all right, first off, it's important to talk about how we track training. So we moved away a couple years ago from Excel and handing out pieces of paper with training notices. We implemented a new software. It's called Frontline Training. It's web-based, so there's the paperwork's gone. And it's easy to track for us to track the training. It has ability to easily access an individual's officer's training records. So instead of looking through Excel and that kind of thing, I could just enter the officer's name and I could see what he or she has done in the year, month, and their whole career. So that way I can send them to the right courses that they need to be a professional police officer. So it streamlines the process, like I talked about, assigning officers to training. I don't put them in their mailbox. I just send them an email, and they're automatically sent to where they have to go. It ensures officers are attending the mandated and the applicable courses. So we have mandates that I have to cover from the state. So this way I can run a quick spreadsheet from the system and see what we're missing or where we're at so I can send them the right courses to make sure we're hitting all our marks. The ability to run training reports with detailed and filtered information for the department and individual officers. So at the end of the year, quarterly, I could run a sheet where we're at, what hours we did in each kind of category, and to see how the department is doing as a whole. 2021, last year, we sent as department officers to over 111 different training courses. Over 7,000 hours of training for our small department. Average training per officer is 191 hours last year. Over 700 hours were training related to community policing, crisis intervention, and procedural justice. Of that 7,000 training, 200 was dedicated to medical and wellness training. Over 550 hours dedicated, geared towards legal updates to keep us, so we're staying up on that. So far in 2022, just in 4 months, We have over 1,100 hours of training, and there's more to come. To date, and for scheduled out for the rest of the year, I have 10 officers attending and instructor level training, so they can come back to the department and teach us, other officers. Training has become more normalized as we emerge from the pandemic. Over 20 and 21, I couldn't send anybody to off-site training. Everything was down. So we're just doing in-service and online training. Now all the classes are full. Like I said, they have 30 people in a class. I'm able to send people. So I'm trying to get that number back. Just a brief on what kind of different kind of trainings there are. I won't read them all, but procedural justice, human rights, community policing, problem-oriented policing, legal updates. Like I talked about, instructor certification, a lot of our officers are certified to teach classes. Defense tactics, emergency driving courses to keep them safe driving. Use of force, crisis intervention, emergency medical response, and numerous others. So just to highlight some of the categories or the issues that we cover, procedural justice, equity training. I send monthly trainings that the officers take online every month. So one of them I found, Department of Justice COPS, Community-Oriented Policing Strategies or Services. It's interactive. The officers pick scenarios, and they have to pick the correct responses to certain situations. So I think it's been very beneficial. A couple other changing perceptions, ethical decision-making, procedural justice, and fair and impartial policing through cultural. De-escalation and crisis intervention training. Do a lot of this. We have a lot of our officers attended the 40-hour crisis intervention team training, dementia live training, mental health awareness response. We took training on response to people in crisis. Our officers attend classes on crisis communication. Deal with the situation to keep. We can avoid using force, and if it's a. There's three types of three ways we deliver training. Offsite, so I send someone to another agency or facility to conduct training. Another is in service, so we have in-service instructors teach the courses here to our officers, and the other is online training, what I talked about. The one I use the most in. What agencies around here use most, it's called NEMRT, Northeastern Multi-Regional Training. So the state is divided into 16 different mobile training units. Ours covers most of the population of Illinois, Cook County, DuPage, Kane, Kendall, Lake, and McHenry. So I'm fighting quarterly to sign up for officers in our department while 300 agencies are doing the same thing to sign up for the same limited amount of classes. So obviously, limited seating per class is the issue. You sign up for a class, if you're a couple minutes late going trying to sign up, there could be a 50-person wait list for that class. So covers a wide range of training. Big key to this, all these classes are certified through the state. So if I send an officer to training and it's not certified through the state, we don't get credit to cover the mandates that we have to. So if we see a great training class, the chief's wants me to send someone, if it's not covered by LSB, the state, it doesn't count towards our mandates. Courses include both state mandated and best practices. Other offsite, FLETC, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. We just had them here in February. They mostly train federal agencies, U.S. Marshal, FBI, but I had them come out here and they did a good class in here with tourniquets, medical training, for our department and other agencies, but we don't get credit because the state doesn't approve that training. Some other ones, Northwestern University, we send our supervisors there for supervision classes, staff and command for 10-week course. But in-service training I talked about, we do that in-house. I send people to instructor-level courses that are certified through the state, then they come back and teach us. That we can tailor to our community, how we do things. More efficient, instead of sending 20 officers to a day-long class, we can do it in-house. They include medical training, use of force, de-escalation, taser, less lethal training, rapid deployment, and numerous other trainings.
online with the pandemic, I had to find other vendors to fill the gaps that the pandemic created. Like I talked about, COPS, the Department of Justice, it's a great course. There's some state ones that we get credit through this state mandated courses. Police Law Institute, we take it monthly. It's up-to-date topics, Illinois-based, that give us real-world new court decisions and how we should be doing our day-to-day activities. We get credit through the state for those. And there's numerous other ones, FEMA, DCFS, and other ones we use. All right, so the mandates, the law that passed last year, more mandates came down to the police officers for us to cover, which we're fine with because no cop wants to train less. So the frequency of trainings range from 1 to 5 years, a state mandate, depending on what categories. You got to do it annually, every 3 years, or every 5 years, depending on. Like I talked about before, it's got to be approved by the state. So we could have in service, I could teach someone, but if I don't get approved by the state, it doesn't count. Yes, it counts for the officer to get the training experience, but to the state eyes, it doesn't count. Mandates continue to be unfunded. Everybody knows that. And it's the state, and the costs are obviously handed down to us. Next. All right, so briefly over some of the state mandates, civil rights, and these are just the categories. Constitutional and proper use of law enforcement, crisis intervention, human rights, legal updates, officer wellness and mental health, procedural justice, domestic violence, reporting child abuse, sex assault. Next. So these are the new mandates. And we were already doing this, so it's no surprise to us. We were already all taking care of this stuff. So de-escalation techniques, medical response, firearms restraining order, high-risk traffic stops, officer safety. But the difference is with the new law, they put the onus on us for how many scenario-based hours we have to do per year. So you can't cover that sending someone to a sit-down in class off-site. That has to be, you know, we're doing scenarios and that. But the problem is the state didn't set up any training to cover that. So there's hard deadlines for us to meet. So how we address this? So as soon as the law changed, I started calling the state, the people that, you know, state passes it, governor signs it, and then someone has to deal with it. Well, they weren't ready, shockingly. So, like I said, when I signed a NEMR class, I'm bidding against 300 other agencies. Well, the state's not going to have enough to make classes to cover these scenario-based training. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with the state to develop our own in-service training and be certified through the state. That way we can stay certified here. So we're in the process, my instructors are in the process of doing that now, and hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll be sending that off. This gives us the opportunity, like I said, we could tailor it to our own needs here. We're different than someone down south. Just quickly, just want to highlight some of the special training some of our officers do. Crisis intervention, elderly service officer, car seat inspection, technician, and some of our in-house instructors, CPR instructors. These are all people that we have currently that are teaching our own. Narcan instructor, use of force, RAD. Next. Mm-hmm. And these are the lists. I'm not going to read it all. There's a lot. This is just to give you an overview of what specialties our individual officers have. And I got to send an officer to a 40-hour class to become one of these, at least a 40-hour class to become certified in these kind of things. How kind of training balance between all that kind of thing. That's my conclusion. I'm going to turn it over to Officer Ransom, who's going to talk about the ABLE project.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
My name is Officer Ben Ransom, Crime Prevention Officer, School Resource Officer. Here tonight to talk to you about the ABLE program, which is implemented through Georgetown University. ABLE stands for Active Bystandership for Law Enforcement, and the goal is to prepare officers to intervene to prevent harm and create law enforcement culture that supports peer intervention. That word bystandership is kind of a new one for us, but the concept behind it is not. It's that intervention which we are called upon to do. But I do like that word bystandership, and I actually do use a similar word when I teach our students in our schools. As most of you know that I do, I teach on cybercrime and cyberbullying and bullying, and I use that word bystander. I could probably add the bystandership, but I say don't be a bystander. Don't stand by and let others get bullied or cyberbullied while you do nothing. It doesn't mean that you would have to physically intervene, but you have to do something to prevent that and to change the culture, which is kind of what we're looking at today. So why should we get involved? The Active Bystandership Program is a proven model in reducing high stress, high stakes decision making. It's actually based on a book, and I'm getting the author's name, but it was adapted from a book and has been used in the past. As you can see in those examples, medical professionals, college campuses. So it is a proven model, one that can be adapted to law enforcement and has been. These tools can help prevent unnecessary harm in law enforcement, preventing mistakes and misconduct while promoting officers' health and well-being. And that health and well-being part is being pushed a lot for our officers, which is a really important aspect. I think, you know, there is a certain stigma that officers have. Officers pull on themselves a lot of pressure to handle things, to adapt things, to not let things affect them. We have things like secondary trauma and a lot of issues that officers experience day-to-day operations, especially on patrol. So I applaud that they have incorporated this into the program to support us in various ways, which goes into that culture. How is this duty different from the duty to intervene training that we already receive? Well, the duty to intervene training tells you here is when you need to step in, which is great. But the ABLE project teaches us how to intervene. Successfully offering skills-based training in the science of active bystandership. And that second bullet point, officers are trained not only in how to give intervention, but how to receive intervention. That, again, is that culture of if someone comes up to you, a fellow officer, and puts their hand on your shoulder and says, hey, let's try a different tactic, or this isn't effective, or this is not a great way to affect the change, to be able to receive that constructive criticism and prevent harm. So that is really an important aspect. In addition, ABLE helps agencies create a climate where it's welcome and effective. So how do we become an ABLE agency? Each agency is accepting the program, must abide by the 10 ABLE standards and submit letters from the community groups vouching for their commitment, which I'll talk about shortly. The standards and community letters alone make ABLE far different from traditional duty to intervene trainings. So briefly, the 10 ABLE standards are community support, meaningful training, dedicated coordination, program awareness, accountability, officer wellness, reporting, measuring officer perceptions, follow through, and paying it forward. In the chief and Chief O'Shea's letter of support, he did mention our shared principles, which are posted here, which we believe are very much in line with the ABLE standards. So who else has adopted ABLE? Some of the credibility of the program and other agencies that we want to align ourselves with. Large police agencies such as Philadelphia, Denver, Baltimore, large police departments, statewide regional agencies, Washington, you see up there, state of New Jersey, New Hampshire standards, board trainings, similar to some of the boards that we have here in Illinois, and even FBI National Academy plans to incorporate it. In looking into this, it was not just like mention of the program, but it's a heavy incorporation into their training program, which is very highly reputed. So by the numbers, I know those numbers are small, so really briefly, I'll just read it from this paper. There are 213 ABLE certified agencies, 39 U.S. states represented, 3 Canadian provinces, 74.6 million community members served by ABLE agencies. And so it is possible that our state or our county will adopt this program at some point. And so then we would kind of just be ahead of the curve looking at this is clearly a positive endeavor and so that we wish to proceed with. What else does ABLE offer our agency? Free and train the trainer programs for our agency, which is what Sergeant Swierczynski mentioned about us being able to take that knowledge back and train others. We wouldn't have to send people out to go train other than the initial trainings. We can add that to our in-service training yearly. Certification and training portals. easy access to PowerPoints and that kind of stuff for our, you know, take a lot of the guesswork out of it. Everything's provided for us with the curriculum. Technical assistance, ongoing implementation. As this program grows and gets better, we would receive those benefits as they carry it deeper and make it better. Provide a wide array of resources, communities, and law enforcement agencies for developing peer intervention programs of their own. This one is a little more in-depth, and at face value, I wasn't able to find out exactly how that would be developed or rolled out. So I think that those discussions would probably be when we were accepted into the program, if and when. And of course, additional transparency and accountability for all stakeholders, which is where those letters of support come into play. Mm-hmm. So where are we in the process? Our ad hoc committee, command supervisors, frontline personnel, have met to evaluate this program. We have received letters of support from Dominican University, RF District 90, and the Community Center as part of this application process. Those will be forwarded on with our application. Chief O'Shea has prepared a letter of support and intent to adopt the Georgetown University program. And the final step is the final submission is a letter of support from the village president, which I understand is being drafted at this time. And so you all will be provided with status updates on this important initiative. Mm-hmm.
To the ABLE program.
I am not aware, Chief.
At the time we had initially met, there was no one else in our area that were adopting this. Even though it does not mean that they might not be as quick as us to be moving forward. And I just wanted to thank real quick Sergeant Sprzynski. As you see, there's a lot of work put into our training program. This could be a much more day-long filled presentation as we got into the weeds. And also, a lot of you already know Ben Ransom, and he really does a great job in the community outreach side. But if there's any general questions, we know this has been a long meeting tonight.
And John's got one.
Anyone? Jonathan?
I sense your justifiable frustration having the state mandate training and then not provide enough slots to get it. Is there anything that the board can do to help you get accredited here locally so that you can get it done without having to go there?
Well, you know, we have to work directly with the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board to get a program approved. And so as we're working, as Sergeant Sprzynski said, to get more of the in-house training approved, that will be a big help. What is difficult, though, is there's not enough funding to that board, that Illinois Law Enforcement Training Standards Board, to pay for instructors, to pay for school locations. And imagine if you were a town, and I'll just use the town to our east, Oak Park, and you have 120 officers, and you're only allowed one or two slots in an offered class. And as was said, you're vying against 300 other law enforcement agencies. So I think that the village board is ongoing communications with the leaders in both the Senate and the House. And, you know, as much as it was very important as part of the Safety Act and other legislation to get passed, they really missed the boat on making sure that everyone get trained up in a timely manner. Mm. And if to answer you, if there's any help, that would be the area. How do we get more money for funding? How do we get more personnel into that board that's doing the work with less staff and less funding that they had in the past?
So it's really lobbying somebody to get funding into that.
Yes, Madam President.
Yeah. If I'm reading between the lines, yeah. You guys are saying that the state is enacting laws,
right,
that are good for training, but they don't fund.
I think it's a common
just theme like
across everything
else
that state government does.
I was going to say.
So it's not just in this one area. I know you guys see this on a regular basis through the legislation that's of interest to you or affects the village.
Steve, let me ask this. In terms of the training you guys do for yourselves, I'm sure other police departments do the same thing. Is there any economies of scale? I know you all work together if there's a tragedy of some sort. But is there something to be said, and you probably maybe already know this, if you guys do certain training, can you encourage your neighboring village police to train them, and then they train you on something else instead of being responsible for all the training?
One thing we do utilize, we're part of a school safety task force, which is about 8 or 10 towns, and we do the active shooter drills. We do MACTAC. We do the medical portion that we actually work with the fire department. And so we do work with multi-agencies, and everyone brings their officers that are trained in those specialties, and we benefit. We host the class over here. We make sure all the local agencies are aware of it. They host the class. They make sure to invite us over. So we have a really good working relationship with all the communities around us, and that stretches out even as far as Skokie, Morton Grove, to the north or into the south suburbs, also in Cook County, especially in DuPage County. It's a lot of work these officers put in, and those that oversee the program and our instructors, everything that they have a unique specialty in, they take it very serious.
I'm curious, Chief O'Shea, if you have any sense of how many hours of training you do that's mandated and how many are not mandated?
That's an excellent question. I would go to my resident expert. Do you have an idea off the top of your head, or was that mentioned in the slide regarding mandated compared to non?
That would be good to know.
We can get that, but we do go well above what would be considered required hours or required courses. And once again, as was mentioned, to really tailor the services that have been expected over decades and decades here, plus what's new and upcoming. Yes, it does. A rarity, Trustee Brennan, to hear that term.
Yeah, we like free.
That's true.
But we can get you any information on training, and it's even become simpler with the investment the village made with regard to the software that we purchased to, once again, with regard to department reports and also individual officers. Well, it's a good question. We do have a Junior Citizens Police Academy that's highly regarded and gets recognized every year, where we have students from the different departments. That's some of our community outreach. We don't have an adult Citizens Academy yet, but we are kind of looking at what interest we would get from the community on that. I know all of you would want to attend that type of academy. I see several volunteers in the room, and Katie, it's free. It's free. But some of the other community training would be, bike safety presentations. We have the Celebrating Seniors Week, which Ben Ransom is going to be teaching on fraud and what else, and scams. So there is a lot of smaller programs that we do to kind of teach the public. Plus, we host the quarterly community safety meetings, which are really topic-based. And, of course, we bring in some experts from some of our other vendors and agencies that serve everything from the unhomed to those with mental health needs.
Thank you. I mean, great question.
Sure. It's been a while since we've given an update, and we probably haven't given one to this level, but I think with the questions that come up and the concerns, we want to make sure not only the board is up to date, but also in this public forum that it's on the record.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you to all the whole team. It was excellent, and I really enjoyed listening to all the training you have to do and the training you want to do. So it's very different. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. All right, so let's move on to 10B. Okay, this is the amendments to the ethics ordinance. I thought I'd have
a village attorney who's attended the Ethics Commission, and they've met several times on trying to, I guess I'll say, change or make stronger, you know, some of our ethics. We haven't looked at it in, since I've been here. I'm 15 years. I've never looked at the ordinance. So I asked Chairman Daly to, along with her two colleagues, to look at the ethics ordinance. And she's quite experienced, and of course, so is our village attorney. So they came up with some good suggestions, gave you a chance to read it. This is just our chance to listen to what you all have and what, you know, Greg could tell us. And then the hope is to come back next board meeting to get an approval of the ordinance, if it makes some sense. Greg.
Yeah, thank you very much. So as President Aducey said, in fall of last year, the Local Ethics Commission, which is a non-mandatory commission that the village has added to its village code to exceed what state law requires, began reviewing the ethics ordinance, which hasn't been substantially amended since 2010. And they went at the ordinance with an eye towards modernizing it, putting in best practices. A lot's changed when it comes to ethics in the last 12 years. And as President Ducey said, you have some members on the Local Ethics Commission with a lot of experience in this area, and they brought that experience to bear. With my assistance and the assistance of staff, they present the red line to you with their recommendation of that you consider the changes. And I will go through and briefly explain the major changes that are in the red line. This red line is comprehensive. I'm not going to take up too much of your time going line by line, but I'll just describe, kind of going following the staff memo format, the major changes on a section by section basis. First of all, the ethics ordinance as a whole has been expanded where appropriate for the first time to cover village contractors. Previously, it only covered employees, elected officials, and appointed officials. Now, if you approve a version of this will cover contractors, people doing or wanting to do business with the village. It's a major expansion of the ethics requirement, good way, obviously. The second, there's a preamble that now explains that this ordinance exceeds all other requirements and cites a number of state laws that impose ethics requirements, so it's easier to find out where we are on those. When it comes to the gift ban in Section 4 of the ordinance, it's expanded. The proposal is to expand the scope of people who may not give illegal gifts to include lobbyists and agents, spouses, and immediate family members of prohibited sources. So state law was amended to include lobbyists. Lobbyists can't give gifts. Your ordinance goes farther to say that the agents, spouses, and immediate family members of people who can't give gifts also cannot give gifts. Right? So you're expanding the scope of people who cannot bribe or try to bribe village. Similarly, the scope of the gift ban is proposed to extend to immediate family members, gifts received by immediate family members of village-covered individuals. So, you know, under the current law and your current ordinance, if someone were to try to bribe an immediate family member, that may fall into a so-called loophole under the ethics requirements. The proposed ordinance would close that loophole. When it comes to prohibited political activities in Section 3 of the ordinance, the standard for a violation of not doing politics with village resources or on village compensated time has changed from intentionally doing it to knowingly doing it. That is a lessening of the standard to capture more conduct, basically. And the Ethics Commission thinks that it's better to make these requirements more stringent, which is what that proposal would do. In Section 5, the conflicts of interest requirements in the village have been expanded to include financial interests of immediate family members and adding an anti-nepotism clause into your village code. 6, there's a mandatory duty to report violations of the ethics ordinance. That is new. That's something that the commission feels very strongly about, so we added that in. In Section 8, the complaints within the purview of the commission, there are a lot of work on their part. They're very procedurally minded folks. They can now consider anonymous complaints of violations within their scope, which are prohibited political activities and gift ban. They must keep complaints filed with them confidential to the extent permitted by law, unless they find that the complaint is supported by sufficient evidence and there's reasonable grounds to establish a violation of the ordinance. And you'll see a number of new screening review steps that they added. They wanted to provide more express guidance to the commission on when they should be allowing the complaint to go to the next step versus it being thrown out at an early stage. And then finally, under remedies in Section 9, the village board now has expressed authority to bar a contractor who violates the ethics ordinance. So if a violation occurs, you may pass a motion and say you're no longer entitled to do business with the village. And those are the big picture changes in the ordinance. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I do have a question on the anonymous. So the commission couldn't pursue anonymous complaints before?
Correct. They had to be written and signed. And the way that was interpreted is that it had to be someone's signature.
Okay.
A person. It had to tie back to a person.
Okay. So currently now, the way it's proposed, they are allowed to do it or are they obligated to do it? The only reason why, as based on the public bodies I've been working with, when we get anonymous complaints, you have to investigate them. And then it turns into malicious complaints. And I'm not saying all of them will. But then you're spending a lot of time on anonymous complaints.
Right.
Where in this case, I mean, if it's allowing the commission, I mean, I would allow them based on their sole discretion whether they want to investigate the anonymous complaint. That way they can decide whether whatever's in the complaint is something worth investigating.
Yes, and that's an excellent point. In my attendance at the commission meetings where the draft was discussed, they spent more time on the issue that you just raised. And the fact that sometimes in some communities, not in River Forest, but other communities, the ethics ordinances can become a political weapon, and we want to stay away from that. And anonymous complaints need to be carefully treated so that they are not used as a weapon for politics. So in this draft ordinance, you have a calibration that they do allow for anonymous complaints, but on page 14, you see a series of review criteria. And if any of those review criteria are met, then the commission may dismiss the complaint at any stage.
Okay.
And if an anonymous complaint does not allow the commission to necessarily gather enough information to determine whether or not there's a sufficient basis. If someone just sends in two sentences without any supporting documentation, that can be summarily dismissed. So the commission made this proposal trying to balance against some of the issues that you raised.
Okay, good.
And so in relation to page 14, the commission shall keep complaints confidential to the fullest extent permitted by the law, and also meetings shall be closed to public, again, to the extent authorized by Open Meetings Act. Yes, I'm asking for the Open Meetings Act, do they allow it, and, you know, what's the, if you can just give some background.
Absolutely. So the Open Meetings Act allows for closed sessions to be held in certain instances when, in order to hear certain types of testimony or evidence when otherwise allowed by law or ordinance in this case. And so it is possible under the Open Meetings Act, depending on the nature of the complaint, and this is one of those it depends answers because the Open Meeting Act has some allowance for that. The idea is that they must go closed session when possible, because if there's frivolous complaints being filed, you don't want to have your ethics commission become a tool for smearing the reputation of good people. And so on a case-by-case basis, we being staff, the attorney, would review the Open Meetings Act in the complaint and determine whether or not it fits within the exception. If so, they must go closed session. If it doesn't fit, it would be done in open session.
One from the public or whoever can't ask for it to be open, and then it's required to be open.
Correct. It would be held in closed session unless the commission found that the complaint was a valid complaint under the ordinance and supported by sufficient evidence to move to the next step, which would then trigger a public process.
I was a little bit confused by the three categories of individuals covered. There's contractors, there's village board members and commissioners, so elected and appointed, and then there's village covered individuals who are elected and appointed, village board members and commissioners, and other officers of the village, police and fire, and employees of the village, and then volunteers of the village. I didn't know what the volunteers meant because we're all volunteers.
Sure.
So are the commissioners.
So village-covered individuals are the broadest category. It's basically everyone you mentioned but contractors. So anyone who is employed appointed or elected to serve in the village or who volunteers on behalf of the village. The idea is that maybe there's some volunteers in the village who hold some authority who aren't Citizens Corps.
I don't appoint them.
Who act on behalf of the village, who may, you know, have maybe not direct spending authority because that should all be routed through staff, but we want to hold them to some kind of ethical standard.
So what do we do about, like, our advisory bodies? Because they're not commissioners necessarily. Like, we've got, like, the DEER committee.
Right.
And EI is advisory.
And
Where do they fall?
So they are both considered part of the village board members and commissioners definition. This is on page 5. And they are also included in the definition of village-covered individuals. And so in the ordinance, when you see those phrases used, I made proposals with commission input, and then we went through and looked at them all. So each time you see one of those phrases used in the ordinance imposing an obligation, it was meant to capture the correct scope of persons. It was a lot of effort to get it.
Can we update that definition then? Because it doesn't say here, it was one of my questions as well for some of these things. It says the village president, village clerk, board of trustees, members of the board of the village, and members of commissions in the village. But ad hoc groups, like advisory groups or committees,
mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily in there, but there are times when you use this and it seems like it should
work. The intent was to capture all persons who are on appointed bodies of the village, and that's an excellent suggestion. I can create some better language to more clearly capture that it is both codified committees and advisory groups, and I can come up with some broader language there.
Okay.
Adding. We'll read it through again, and if you have any comments or questions, feel free to call behind myself, and then Village Attorney Smith, and then
mm-hmm.
But the hope is to, bring this back. Hopefully, Chairman Daly will come. Enormous amount of time. Needed update now. So I'm real proud of them, and we'll be proud of us once we approve it next time we meet. So we'll go on to, unless there's any other comments on that, we'll go on to the last and final issue, C, and this is consensus. Well, I think this is
No vote.
The ethics room is just to review it with the board, and then we'll bring it back.
So this is just a renewal of an existing contract that we have with Safe Built. Currently, the village uses BNF Construction Services for permit reviews. It's a third-party consultant who basically just supplements staff when it comes to reviewing permits. We've been using them since 2011. The last couple of years, with permits substantially increasing, we've had trouble absorbing that in-house, and frankly, BNF has had some trouble absorbing that extra load as a consultant as well. So in an effort to kind of make this portion, the review portion of our permit process, a little more streamlined and efficient, we began talking to SafeBuilt, whom we currently use for structural reviews, and began talking to them about other reviews that they could perform for us. So they're able to perform basically any and all reviews that we need to do based on the permits that we issue. So we're essentially just going to ramp up the amount of work that we send over to SafeBuilt. So instead of using BNF as much as we have been, we'll just be sharing more of that load with SafeBuilt in the future. So it looks like, based on the time frames that they provide, cutting our review times close to in half, that's certainly the goal. But with LLAMA, the implementation of our permit software last year, that's streamlined the submittal process. Now we're kind of taking a look at the review portion of the process and how we can make that more efficient. And again, no vote necessary, but certainly want to make sure the board was aware of our efforts to just generally make that process more efficient. So, correct.
Okay.
Correct. We do take that back. We pass through costs for commercial, multifamily, larger developments. Single family residential, those permits do pass through them, but it's in the form of our permit costs, our permit. So effectively, yes, it's not a direct, here's the invoice, we need that money back. But I mean, we're covering. That is the idea, but also something we want to look at. That's why we want to look at the permit reviews later this year, or our permit fee structure later this year, just to make sure that that continues to be the case. And we're also going to monitor, because this is a new, not a new consultant, but we're going to be using them for kind of new purposes. That's something we're going to monitor to make sure that those costs aren't, you know, vastly different than what we were currently generating, you know, with the other vendor, just to make sure that our permit fee structure does account for any increases that would.
Jeff, is you contemplating probably just going with Safebuilt in lieu of BNF construction? I know you're using both right now.
Fair question. It's all going to be finding that sweet spot, right? So we've also got staff in-house as well. So we've got multiple players in the game, and at first we're just going to kind of flip the switch and start sending everything to Safebuilt. That's the idea. And if that makes our process that much more efficient, then we'll leave it alone. If we do see some reason to kind of come back down and find a happier medium somewhere in there, that's certainly something we're going to keep.
I know that, you know, one of the things I ask with, and Lisa, I mean, is to try to get the permitting. It was somewhat arduous, somewhat difficult. And I'm not sure this contract's going to solve that problem completely, but, you know, it's an alternative vendor, which I think. Any other questions? Thank you, Jeff. All right. Well, I think that concludes we don't have an executive session. So I'll just ask for a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. So here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bachman?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell? Yes. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
President?
All right, guys. Have a good evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.